Morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. You?
Yes, we're all bright and cheery for a Monday morning.
Yeah, it is, isn't it, really? This thing with, because we've spoken many times about taking your dog out in the middle of the day, and of course the asphalt and the concrete and all that are sort of overheated, and of course it's not good for, you know, doggy's paws. And the temptation is to, well, if you see some water, let them go into it.
It's a huge temptation, that, isn't it?
I have a fear with this one because we take little Archie down an old railway track. It's cleared. It's,
right.
Well, he likes water. But the trouble is the water looks nice and clear and benign and all the rest of it. He goes in, he comes out black. So you don't know what's in that water. And I would guess that it's the same thing for others. There's all sorts floating around that water, isn't there?
There is. And also the other thing is underneath the water, because I've got a dog that particularly likes cheating if there's any water about. She loves swimming, but instead of just sliding in and swimming to go and pick something up, she'll run and jump, you know, like the kids at a
doggy
swimming
belly
pool
flop.
And they and bomb. Yeah, honestly. And you and yeah, so she runs and jumps and then and you don't know what's under the water. And as the water levels in some of the ponds that she's been doing that to have dropped, you're so alarmed at what's in the pond. I mean, we are careful. That's an extreme thing to talk about. But I would say, you're not going to know what's under the water, but make sure you've got some, if your dog's going to be an idiot, make sure you've got deep water for your dog to go in. But more importantly, what the water looks like, because you've got to look at it and think, would I go in that myself? And as you say, around where we are, we've got a lot of iron type water where we're in an area where there's lots of iron anyway. And a chum of mine, her dog's not particularly well at the moment. And she finds somewhere, drives somewhere for her dog to have a good old splash about and a bit of a swim. And there's another place that the water is a bit more brackish because of the iron. And the dog then actually, its paws get very itchy. So she's not been doing that recently. She sticks to one area. So, you know, look at the results of what happens when you do go to these ponds and rivers and what have you. But most importantly is look at it. And if it's got one of the algae blooms on it, they're very dangerous. You know, the dog can lick fur and be ill. As it swims, its mouth's open, the water goes in. One of our chums has got a rescue Labrador, and the idiot, when it's swimming, it's doggy paddling. So as it's doggy paddling, the bubbles are going up, and it's trying to catch the bubbles.
Yep.
It's just hilarious to watch. So its mouth's open, it's snapping away as the feet are going up and down. So that's a dog that actually would be desperately ill
if it went anywhere near algae bloom. It's difficult to know where it's actually safe, because you've got water companies pumping out raw sewage into various different waterways. You don't know which ones, and you don't know how that spreads further down river. You've got various different toxins going in, and at the moment the warning comes it's in an issue of the Canine Times, believe it or not, and it says dog walkers are being urged to take precautions when walking pets near freshwater bodies this summer, as the warm weather brings with it an increased risk of toxic blue-green algae growth. And it's described as a group of bacteria that can contain dangerous toxins which can be harmful and potentially fatal to pets if ingested, even in small quantities. So the question is, where do you let your dog off?
I know, that is the thing. And, you know, and symptoms can appear within a few minutes of doing this. And then you could be in the middle of somewhere where you can't get to your vet.
Yeah.
And they can be very, very unwell, could take up a couple of hours. But even so, I think it is that thing. And also because we've had such a dry spell, that's when it all starts moving around. You don't generally get this. It's the sunshine and the dry weather. It all sort of builds it up, doesn't it? So I think you've got to be very careful. The sea, but then again, you know, we know from sewage as well. I think just be mindful. And it's quite difficult to identify. You can look at water and think, oh, that looks all right. Just looks a bit whatever. But I really think you need to err on the side of caution, especially as we've had quite a long dry spell and everything's sort of suffering a bit. I know there's been some days where I've walked my dog and thought there's no way you're going anywhere near that water.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even just going on the edge of the water and then lick their paws or whatever, they could become incredibly ill.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think you just need to know. I think there are actually some places that are open to the public, like specific parks and things. Mm. I think they do let you know if there's an algae. I know down at Buell Water, they let you know if the algae is blooming. Mm. So you might have
just
a look into
that first.
Just keep
an eye out for it and do your homework first, I suppose, is probably the thing to do there.
And especially not young pups. Because, of course, being, you know, your young pups, they haven't got their metabolic rate. They haven't got their thermostat sorted. So, of course, with the weather's being warmer, they get very hot very quickly. So the trick is to keep your young dogs in or go out very early in the morning or very late at night where it's cooler, morning better than evening because it's had all day to heat up.
Mm.
But, you know, they get very hot very quickly. So people think, oh, well, I'll just cool my dog down in the water because it's got too hot. But, you know, a young pup, as you say, you were just about to say, their immune system's a bit, you know, it's not brilliant. So, and old dogs as well. And, you know, these types of conditions, the greenish, brown algae and so on and so forth, can... you know, can affect any dog of any age, even your fittest dog, but especially either ends of the spectrum where you've got young dogs and old dogs. Yeah. And just keep away from it. Best bet is get a paddling pool and pop it in the garden. So, of course, we've done that.
How are you going to fill one these days? There are hosepipe bands.
It's been filled for a short while before the hosepipe. But, of course, so we've got this marvellous paddling pool and it is completely and utterly redundant and dormant. And the dogs walk round it, they put their head over, have a look in it, and you just think, oh, you tinkers. Even the one that's a water monster.
You'll get algae growing in it before long.
Yeah, there you go. I'll get blue-green algae in it.
That warning, by the way, comes from the British Veterinary Association, who have reported this and saying that there are no known antidotes for the toxins. So if you think your dog has come into contact with this stuff and is showing signs of feeling unwell, get them to the vet pretty quickly to get some prompt treatment.
And it looks like there's a blooming algae app, whatever that is. So
might be an app that tells you there's blooming algae, but I don't know how these apps
work. You could pop that on your phone along with obviously all your M&S stuff and all the Amazon.
Your steps.
And your steps. So I don't know how good it is. But anyway, there you go. Yeah. I think the sensible thing is don't, unless the water looks the sort of water that you want to go in yourself. Good flowing water is a lovely one. You know, if you've got a really good flowing stream, that's always... some dogs are actually quite savvy. And there is that element where a lot of dogs like drinking what's called from... There's this thing, dogs like drinking from a muddy puddle, and its health benefits are massive.
Yeah, ours actually drinks from, umbrella stands and the water base at the bottom.
Yeah.
It's a base, you fill it with water. Mm. Archie likes to drink out of that.
It's bizarre, isn't it?
Yes.
I sometimes fill it from the water butt. We've put charcoal in the water butts, and I quite often give her water butt water, and she loves that. She won't touch tap water.
No,
none of them will.
Can't say I blame her either.
Well, exactly. You know, it does say something, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Anyway, so, I'm going to move on swiftly from that, because the other thing that's been around, and I saw actually an advert for one today, actually, are these e-collars. We're not talking about as with an electric car, it being sort of something that where you can track your dog. It's actually a device sold as a training device, which can actually cause your dog some discomfort.
Yes, and I think you've sort of hit the nail on the head, Tony, by saying e-collar and not like an electric car. It's quite clever marketing in so much as just saying, calling it an e-collar. It makes
it's fairly
it feel,
appalling, actually.
Yeah, no, it makes it feel all soft and squidgy. And, I want one of those too, thank you very much. And the fact that you can get them on Amazon ranging from $39.99 or something to, I mean, it goes up to
a couple
of hundred quid.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is, £36 £0.59, and then you got a bit of a couple of quid of delivery.
I don't know if any other
on top of that.
I haven't done the homework, but I don't know if any other mainstream retailers have taken these on. You know, any of the pet retailers at all, but certainly Amazon have. And for my part, I would say shame on you for this one, because they are terrible, terrible things. Can we just explain what they are?
Right, okay, so it is, I mean, in the olden days, it was called a shock collar. So it's a collar with a little box on it with two metal prongs that go into your dog's, or just sit on your dog's neck, and that's where the shock is delivered. And there's a control handset that you have, and it ranges in extremes of shock or vibration or whatever. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, well, it's just a vibration, it's a bit like a TENS machine, it's a blah blah. But even so, you have to look at why are you doing this? Why do you not just do training, you know, go to positive reinforcement classes and just spend longer doing it? And it's got very, very popular recently. It's going up in popularity, as is a lot of things where people aren't prepared to put the effort in. So employing a dog walker, going to doggy daycare, just just renting a field so your dog can run around for half an hour. And so now this is getting popular, and it all stinks of people not having enough time to do proper training with their dog, or even wanting to, or the most important thing, I think a lot of people are not getting the breeds that they should get for A, their own character, B, their lifestyle, and C, their time commitments. Yeah. They're getting dogs that really are not suitable for them, and then they're struggling. And they're resorting in something like an e-collar. There are professionals out there, there are trainers out there that help people use them or advise, and I think that's sad that it's come to that. It's good in a way that there are people out there that say you have to do it like this, and you haven't just gone and bought one on Amazon and read the leaflet and chucked it out like most people do with leaflets and think, oh well, I can do that. So from that point of view, the people that do that are passionate about it, saying that it's a good thing in so much as it can keep your dog safe. So if you've got a dog that runs, if you've got a hunting dog that runs off, it can keep your dog safe. It can.
How?
Well, exactly, because the moment it starts running, you initially you've trained the dog and you zap it and it can call it and it comes back.
Yeah, that's the hope. It's not always the case. Sometimes guess if you shock a dog like that, they're going to run away even further.
Well, you see, so the flip side of that is that you can make the dog quite nervous. Obviously, it can start, as soon as the collar's on, it can start panting and its heart rate can go up more. And you can also cause problems with other dogs, in so much as that they can become a little bit dog aggressive. So we had a situation ages ago. We were out on our walk, and we had three dogs, and we met up with a couple of chums who probably had three dogs. So those three dogs were German Shepherds, very well behaved. They'd, funnily enough, they'd all come to my class, and very, very nice behaved, very good owners, off lead, excellent. So.
Yeah.
A guy coming towards us with a little hound type dog. Now we know, obviously, hounds they're scent dogs, and they run around and they chase things and so on and so forth, because that's in their DNA. They're pack dogs. That's what they're used for. So you have to then make just decision: am I going to get that sort of dog? So coming towards us is this nice little hound with a huge fat collar on its neck. We've seen this dog quite a few times. We've approached the owner, you know, and all we get is my dog, my rules, when asked about the collar. And anyway, this little dog came trotting up and went over to one of the shepherds that was in a perfect sit stay. The owner called it, and then the next thing, the dog yelped, which was the owner shocking it, and the owner called it back. And at that point, the dog t- turn to go back to the owner. Now, logically, in a situation like that, the dog would have naturally thought, and this is what happens, the dog would have naturally thought that that shepherd that was sitting in a perfect sit, stay, or wait, I forget what the command was, that dog was the thing that made his neck hurt. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So he would have associated that dog with the pain that he got, not his owner who was standing way, way away. And then, you know, you could have then had a full-scale fight on your hand. The dog could have thought, well, I'm not having this. I'm going to have a go at you. And then the same dog, about a month or so later, we were getting our dogs out the car. And this little dog, the problem is, this owner, which I won't swear, but I want to do lots of big sweary words about him. This particular owner never puts the dog, it's a lovely little dog, never puts it on the lead, just uses this shock collar the whole time, like a little remote control car. And so this dog came over to our car when we were getting our guys out. And we said, you know, go away. He obviously heard us say, go away. The moment his dog came and actually touched one of our dogs, he zapped his dog. Our dog got the shock. And so our dog yelled. And we pushed the dog away. And that could have caused a good old fight as well.
Yeah.
Pushed the dog. And it's just, you know, it's unbelievable.
So, I mean, there are so many other ways. I mean, there are so many other ways of training your dog without using those things that, to me, just sound utterly cruel and repellent.
I know, and people will argue the toss. I mean, it can make your dog become aggressive towards you. People will argue the toss and say, well, it's better that my dog now is off lead and can run free and blah, blah, blah. But if you think before we had all these instruments of torture, people actually put a bit more time into training or they thought, well, actually, this is, I know with my own dog that we've rescued a couple of years ago, she's not really a pet. I mean, she's an absolute sweetheart, but she's a strong working dog. And I'm fortunate to be in the position I'm in where I can throw her into every class that I take. So she's busy doing that.
And she thoroughly enjoys it.
And she loves it. But she's not a pet at all. And she's a sweet dog indoors, but the moment she's out, the nose is down and she's absolutely driven by sense. And the training is that, you know, when we took her from rescue, they said the one thing you must instill in this dog is her recall. And touch wood, it's not too bad. But there's no way. I mean, she's the type of dog that in other hands she would end up with a shock collar on.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, though, isn't it? When you say about you must get your dog on a good recall, that's the same thing for every dog, really, and it's the one problem, which is why you have this market for these really awful collars.
Exactly.
So anybody that's thinking of getting one of these e-collars, don't be fooled by it. Don't buy it. And sorry, I'm being quite blunt about that. All I would suggest you do is contact a regular, friendly dog trainer and learn how to recall your dog, and then you'll find that the electric collars are absolutely no use.
No, I mean, it is such a shame because you can get pain, pain marks on the neck. And the dogs are sensitive creatures. Yeah. They've got sensitive necks. And I mean, I get why people... I get this thing where people say, oh, it's a last resort, I need to get my dog off lead, and I live where there's loads of livestock, and I blah blah blah.
You can't let your dog off near lots of livestock, doesn't matter how good their recall is, and that's the point. And sometimes it's the owners as much as the dogs that need the advice of a good dog trainer. Wendy, we are actually at the end of our session, and we could talk about this thing all day. I know we could.
I mean, I can't go on about it anymore. I've got
no.
To
you
stop.
Can. You can. You come back. Come back in a month's time, and we'll do some more on it. And you can you can vent then, I think. But for now, Wendy,
my spleen.
Yeah. Thank you for talking to us, and we'll catch up with you again in a month's time, Wendy. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.